In 1999, the Ontario Conservative government passed the Safe Streets Act, an act that criminalized homeless activities, particularly targeting squeegee workers and panhandlers. The act was a further demoralizing blow to poor communities who were already struggling with the effects of Tory-imposed cuts to social assistance rates, elimination of rent controls, and cancellation of social housing projects. The rapid degeneration of Ontario's social services legislated thousands of people into poverty, and as the number of homeless on the province's streets swelled, and as more people relied on street work to survive, the Mike Harris Tories further advanced their heavy-handed, tough-on-crime agenda, targeting the very people who they had forced on the streets. 6 years after its implementation, I asked people to reflect on the Safe Streets Act and the effects that it has had on the homeless community. In Toronto, one of the leading forces against the devastating neoliberal agenda of the provincial Tory and Liberal governments has been the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. OCAP has been fighting for the rights of poor people in downtown Toronto for over a decade and has been organizing against the effects of the Safe Streets Act and has supported those who have faced criminal prosecution under the Act's provisions. I spoke with OCAP organizer John Clark.
So what is the Safe Streets Act and what does it give police the power to do? It's essentially a law that was passed as part of a Tory support for what we might term social cleansing, the removing of homeless and destitute people from areas of cities where they're not wanted but are slated for tourist expansion, redevelopment, etc. And it's a bill that does a number of things, but key to them is it bans the act of surviving by squeegeeing. And it places very, very significant restrictions on panhandling, so that people can't panhandle next to a subway station, they can't panhandle next to an automatic bank teller, they're banned from panhandling aggressively, which essentially means whatever a cop wants it to mean. So it's actually a weapon that the police have been provided with to harass and drive away homeless and poor people seeking to survive.
How is the Safe Streets Act part of a wider effort to criminalize poverty? How does it fit with other kind of governmental legislation?
Well, I mean, it's linked directly to the social cutbacks that have taken place that have created a larger and larger homeless and destitute population. But what you really have is a drive to redevelop urban areas in a way that's in the interests of the financially upscale, and to clear away populations that are unwanted, low-income tenants and homeless populations. So it's a direct weapon in that regard, and certainly it's part of a whole criminalization of the poorest people that includes the creation of super jails and the general law and order crackdown that's in evidence.
How have the police in Toronto been using the powers given to them by the Safe Streets Act?
Well, it's given them a kind of a legal handhold. It didn't initiate the harassment that goes on, but it's given them an actual weapon to use to target people that are trying to survive by panhandling. And like for example, the old vagrancy laws that used to exist up until the 1970s, it's used as a selective tool to remove people from particular areas and sometimes at particular times, so that if there's going to be a major tourist event and the homeless in a given area are not wanted, the Safe Streets Act is a very convenient weapon. If there's a proliferation of condos going up in a particular area and the yuppie residents don't want to see homeless people in their neighborhood, then the Safe Streets Act again is a very useful weapon for the cops to be able to use in their general function of serving and protecting wealth.
How did the introduction of the Safe Streets Act affect the homeless community in Toronto?
Well, it particularly harshly affected primarily young people that were squeegeeing as a means of survival. It hasn't ended squeegeeing, but it's made it profoundly difficult for people to engage in. And then it's also used as a way of making it almost impossible for people to panhandle. There's still a great deal of panhandling that goes on, but whenever the cops decide they want to organize a crackdown or move against a particular group of people at a particular time, they're able to do it with great effectiveness.
I read a quote from a newspaper around when the act was first being introduced from a member of the Tory government saying that the act was not necessarily about criminalizing people, it was about criminalizing behavior. With this quote in mind, what is your response to the recent proposed changes to the act that will make it legal for charities to solicit money on the street, i.e. like the firemen doing boot drives, while it'll still remain illegal for homeless people to solicit money on the street?
Well, I think that's only codifying something that's already been accepted with a kind of a wink and a nod. In fact, quite notoriously, Harris, on one day in the legislature when the act was coming into law, was questioned about the possibility of charities being targeted, and there happened to be a group of visiting cops sitting up in the gallery, and he said that it was an insult to them to suggest that they would use the law in such a way. So the actual head architect of the legislation always was quite clear in his own mind that it was to be used as a weapon against poor people. And I remember Attorney General at the time, James Flaherty, rather amusingly suggested that it wasn't targeting poor people because the law applied to everybody just the same. So the absurd implication was that if Edgar Bronfman or Conrad Black decided to panhandle in front of an automatic bank teller, they'd be just as likely to be targeted as a homeless person. But it's like the old famous saying about how the law in its majestic equality prohibits rich and poor alike from stealing bread and sleeping under bridges and sleeping on the streets.
How has OCAP and people in Toronto been fighting the effects of the Safe Streets Act?
We've done it through a combination of legal challenge, including a constitutional challenge to the legislation that we were involved in. We've done it as part of an overall drive to collect up tickets that people have been receiving and contest them in court. And we've also, politically acted to demand that this kind of legislation, this kind of social cleansing legislation, be taken off the books. It's a matter of record, actually, that the Liberals in opposition opposed the passage of the Safe Streets Act, but have actually intervened in court through their control of the Attorney General's office to defend the legislation.
Why do you think it's important both to fight the kind of the street level effects of it, but also approach it from a constitutional perspective as well?
Well, obviously, the fact that such a law actually exists is very significant and very damaging. And anything that can be done to undermine that legislation, to get it removed from the books, would be important. But at the same time, like all these legal provisions, the real issue is how they're enforced and how they're implemented on the streets, and to the extent that the cops can function with impunity and they don't feel that there's any level of challenge, then they become emboldened and in the final analysis don't in fact need a Safe Streets Act if they feel that they can do anything they want.
Like most urban centres in Ontario, Ottawa's homeless community has felt an increase in police harassment since the inception of the Safe Streets Act. During the busy tourist seasons, police routinely use the provisions given to them by the Safe Streets Act to sweep the streets of the homeless. In Ottawa, activists and the homeless have started a ticket defense program to fight Safe Streets Act tickets in court. After the homeless action strike in the summer of 2003, which saw activists and the homeless set up a squad under a bridge within sight of provincial government offices, and after a tent city was set up outside of Ottawa City Hall last summer, the City of Ottawa set up a task force on homelessness and the Safe Streets Act. I spoke with Jane Scharf from the Homeless Action Strike about the task force and how the Safe Streets Act is affecting the homeless community in Ottawa.
The Safe Streets Act in Ottawa is used to prohibit all panhandling, even though the text of the act isn't anywhere near that broad. They one of the police officers actually stated to me that they're told when they see that hat, when they see the cup, they're supposed to approach the individual and proceed to inhibit the behavior or issue a ticket. And in the case of persistence, they actually use the Safe Streets Act improperly to incarcerate.
With, I guess, the situation in Ottawa, what do you think has spurred on this kind of arbitrarily using the Safe Streets Act to criminalize the homeless people?
July 1st, when tourism really starts to pick up in Ottawa, it's a huge crackdown. Like, there's way more officers involved in the application, and at Winterlude, you'll go, you know, several months, and there won't be too much adherence or too much enforcement, and then all of a sudden, first day of Winterlude, all of a sudden they're hitting every single panhandler several times a day and being really aggressive with it, tickets and escalated amounts on the tickets and threats of incarceration and actual incarceration in some cases. It's definitely tied to the objective of, you know, keeping the city looking like it's functioning, you know, economically. Or actually, I guess in Ottawa, even they're trying to, in many cases, make the country look like, you know, because we have visitors from all over the world visiting us in Ottawa as the capital of Canada. So they're concerned that we look a certain way is much higher, I think, in Ottawa than in other areas.
How have you seen, I guess, the introduction of the Safe Streets Act and then the police harassing the homeless? How have you seen that affect the homeless community in Ottawa?
Well, they are very intimidated by the policing practices here. It's very aggressive. But there has been a considerable amount of community support for the homeless people, I assume, because of the evident oppressive treatment. There's a ticket defense program, for example, that fights all the tickets homeless people receive, either under Safe Streets Act or other legislation that prohibits sleeping outside and things like that. And we had a protest at Henrito, which is provincial government in Ottawa here, and there's a bridge adjacent to it. So we had a squat there in the summer of 2003. And I actually gave up my home to participate in that, and I called it a homeless action strike. And homeless people joined me immediately. And there was within days, there was about 25, 30 homeless persons that joined into that. And what was very striking about that whole process is that we got tremendous support from the community at large, both activists and church-involved persons and politicians, from everywhere we got support. And quite a bit of attention was drawn and some changes made. Not enough. We did another protest last summer, Tent City, at City Hall. And out of that protest, out of two protests, but at the end of that protest, the city negotiated with us to shut down Tent City, and they offered this task force on homelessness and the Safe Streets Act, and we agreed. It didn't end exactly as smoothly as what I just stated there. After the agreement was reached and we agreed to shut down the Tent City, they still took it down by force. I guess they didn't want the public to realize that we had negotiated an effective resolution. But in any event, they did put the task force up, and our group has been participating in it, and a number of homeless people actually are participating in it as well. Thus far, it hasn't issued any resolutions yet or any recommendations yet to the city, but we're hopeful that they will respond, for example, to the input from several lawyers that participated last meeting. Martha Jackman from University of Ottawa, a constitutional lawyer, and Susan Boleyn and Yaver Hamid all presented their position on the Safe Streets Act in terms of police interpretation and as well in terms of the constitutional problems that this legislation presents. And they specifically stated that the police in Ottawa were heavy-handed in their application of the Safe Streets Act, and that it went well beyond its scope in terms of enforcement in Ottawa. And as well, Martha Jackman issued a statement that it was her opinion that the Safe Streets Act is unconstitutional and that this will be the ultimate finding of the Supreme Court. And in the meantime, all three lawyers actually recommended that the City of Ottawa and the Crown, like the police and the Crown, hold back in prosecution until those deliberations are made because of these violations. So we're hoping that the final report from the task force will reflect those recommendations, and many other recommendations have come from the community, such as John Bagelow from the Witness Program made a presentation in which he asked that the task force recommend that the police draw up guidelines that the officers need to follow in the application of the Safe Streets Act, and that those regulation or those guidelines be made public, and that there be some public input in the creation of the guidelines. And I thought that was a very useful recommendation and something I'm very strongly supportive of in terms of the final recommendations from the task force.
You mentioned this briefly a little bit, but I was wondering if you could further explain the ticket defense program and how you've been using it to fight against the effects of the Safe Streets Act.
It's a group of activists, primarily, and outreach workers, and there's actually a few lawyers that are participating. And what they do is they gather the tickets from outreach workers. I gathered a large number of them in my work on the street, and other programs like Center, the drop-in centers, so Center 507 and 454, and the youth drop-in Operation Go Home, collect the tickets from the homeless person and get an authorization form signed. And then these individuals get a hearing date for the ticket, and they appear in court on behalf of the individual. And it's very, very effective. So far, there hasn't been one conviction under the Safe Streets Act. I think it was I think the figure was 110. I think it was even more than that. I think it might have been somewhere close to 200 tickets that they've taken in. And I know what it was, 100 and some that were processed, and not one conviction within the number that are already processed. And then there's a number that are still outstanding and they've got hearings from the FBI. But over half of them have been dealt with and no convictions. They're pretty effective.
In addition to challenging the street-level effects of the Safe Streets Act, lawyers and activists have fought against the act in Ontario courts. Martha Jackman is a constitutional lawyer and a professor at the University of Ottawa, and we spoke about the legal implications of the act and the history of how it's been challenged in court.
I think the two different aspects of the act probably have to be looked at separately. What has been challenged so far in Ontario, but also similar legislation has been challenged in British Columbia, are the provisions around either aggressive panhandling or squeegeeing. And in both those cases, you know, one could at least imagine the Attorney General coming up with an argument why it's justifiable to prevent people from panhandling like that, either because it creates a well-founded fear in the person being panhandled, or because it presents a danger to, you know, other users of the road or to panhandlers themselves, even though those provisions clearly, in my view, violate both freedom of expression and equality rights of panhandlers, one could imagine a justification for them under Section 1 of the Charter. But the provisions around panhandling a captive audience that don't engage those kinds of, you know, clear safety issues, in my view, those provisions are clearly unconstitutional. So the idea that somebody sitting in the wheelchair or on the side of the road with a cup, you know, asking passersby to give them money, the idea that somehow it's constitutionally legitimate to abrogate the freedom of expression or equality rights of panhandlers in that situation, I consider untenable.
Are these issues in general issues that fall within the kind of provincial domain?
Well, this is a second set of really serious constitutional issues around this legislation. The first set relates to the way in which it violates people's constitutional rights. The second set of concerns is around the issue whether what the province is really trying to do here is to criminalize panhandling and panhandlers. And the criminal law jurisdiction is one that belongs exclusively to the federal parliament. So when the provinces attempt to legislate to criminalize things like panhandling and these kinds of challenges have come up in the past around provincial attempts to or municipal attempts to criminalize prostitution, for example, that is, again, unconstitutional on division of powers grounds. And there's a very serious concern here that what this legislation seems to be trying to do is to criminalize panhandlers. And it's certainly being used to create the impression amongst panhandlers and the public that panhandling is illegal. It's a criminal activity, and when you engage in it, no matter where you are, you're subject to being prosecuted. And that's what's happening to people.
Could you give a background on your recent presentation that you gave to the Ottawa Task Force on Homelessness and the Safe Streets Act?
Well, a lot of municipalities, not only in Ontario but across Canada, are dealing with problems because of, you know, successive governments cutting back in social assistance and other social supports for people living in poverty. And clearly, the farther down the ladder you are in terms of mental health or addiction or homelessness problems, the more likely you are to be in the street. And there's not much of a safety net left in Canada. So this task force is trying to take, as I understand it, a much more global view of the problem of homelessness and some of the manifestations of it at the municipal level. And what the task force was asked to do was to provide some expert evidence for the task force on the, first of all, the legality of the way the legislation is actually being applied by the police and the Crown in Ottawa, and then on the broader issue of the constitutionality of the legislation. And so I am a constitutional law expert. I work primarily in the area of poverty and equality, and that is why they asked me to come in and talk to it.
I guess, finally, could you give a status of some of the kind of current constitutional challenges to the Safe Streets Act? Like, where do things sit as far as the courts here in Ontario, or perhaps even in other provinces as well?
Well, the most active litigation is here in Ontario, where the Ontario Court of Appeal has just granted leave to appeal the Banks case, which is a case involving the aggressive panhandling provisions and the squeegeeing provisions. So it's only one part of that legislation that's being tested right now. And that the panhandlers who challenged the aggressive panhandling and the, you know, panhandling people in car provisions, that challenge was lost at trial. And then in the Superior Court, again, because the courts felt that it was justified for the government to restrict panhandling that either created, you know, real safety concerns in members of the general public, or that presented, you know, a hazard for panhandlers themselves or other users of the road. So there is the captive panhandling provisions, which are the most constitutionally suspect, are not actually before the courts right now. But the aggressive panhandling provisions are going up now to the Ontario Court of Appeal. It's clearly driving people into the street, either as panhandlers or, in the case of women, often as prostitutes. And, you know, you end up trying to deal with these issues as constitutional infringements, which is a pretty long road to go. But that's basically what people are left with when governments are, you know, so punitive in the way they're dealing with poverty.
Ontario's Safe Streets Act was the first time in over a century that a province in Canada had implemented wide-scale legislation curbing homeless activities. The passing of the legislation in Ontario paved the way for similar laws to be passed in Alberta, and just last year the Liberal government of BC, who since elected have been following the Harris blueprint of gutting the province's social service infrastructure, passed their own version of the Safe Streets Act. I spoke with Sarah Kahn, a staff lawyer with the BC Public Interest Advocacy Centre, about opposition to the BC Safe Streets Act and police response to their new powers.
There was a member of the Legislative Assembly here, Lauren Mayencourt, in the Vancouver Burrard riding, who initially put it forward And so the bill was first introduced in May of last year, and then it sort of died on the order paper, and then was revived in the fall sitting, and passed through the House in BC. Of course, I can't speak for Lauren May in court. I don't know, and for the Liberal government, and why they decided to put this thing in, but I would assume that they're trying to clean up the streets and put poor people, hide away poor people rather than having them out in the open.
Has the act itself been part of other kind of legislated changes that have attacked the poor or homeless community?
Oh yes, over the last few years in BC, the provincial government has done lots of things that have directly affected poor people in the province. They've cut welfare rates, they've increased the income assistance eligibility rules, they've slashed housing programs. They cut all funding for poverty law legal representation. They cut much funding for community-based advocacy services for people who need it, who were having problems with poverty-related matters. They've closed residential tenancy offices, many residential tenancy offices around the province. They cut the debtor assistance program. I could go on.
How have the police in BC, even maybe specifically Vancouver, how have they been using the power given to them by the Safe Streets Act?
We're actually having a slightly different response from the Vancouver Police Department. I was just rereading a CBC radio or CBC website report where a Vancouver police inspector responsible for downtown Vancouver was actually questioning the effectiveness of the Safe Streets Act. This was early in April, and where the police inspector was actually saying that that they are enforcing the new law and have handed out they've handed out tickets and warnings to about 10 panhandlers over the last month, but an inspector named Val Harrison said that the poor and drug addicted in Vancouver need treatment and housing, not tickets and fines. And she actually went on to say that the vast majority of this behavior is nuisance behavior, and that fining people, you know, what's that going to do? So we're actually quite impressed with how the VPD is responding so far. Certainly, I can't give you comments on how they're using the law to move people along, and we certainly know that they've been issuing tickets. But just that statement is we think quite encouraging, that they realize that the problems relating to poverty are not so simple as finding people and trying to push them, keep moving them along.
How have people in BC been fighting the effects of the Safe Streets Act? Has there been campaigns to fight the tickets that have been given to homeless people? Has there been a more general political campaign in BC against the Act itself?
Some groups, yes, have been campaigning against the Safe Streets Act and enforcement of it. We've also been working with the BC Civil Liberties Association to monitor what's happening with the Safe Streets Act, and so we plan to, for example, just help to let people know what their rights are under the legislation.
What, in your opinion, would be a better alternative to some of the kind of legislation that the BC government has put in place?
Well, I think that the most obvious thing would be to loosen some of the tight eligibility criteria for income assistance. The City of Vancouver has, for example, put out reports showing that many of the homeless people in our city are having great difficulty accessing income assistance benefits. And we would really like to see the Liberals change welfare eligibility criteria to get rid of some of the harsher rules. And I think maybe the government has been given that message in our recent provincial election. The opposition party here, the NDP, was elected in 33 of the 79 seats, going from 3 seats to 33. So it might be sending a message to the government that we need to actually take care of our poor people rather than criminalizing them.
6 years after its implementation, the Safe Streets Act has done little to make city streets safer. Many believe that the poorly thought-out act has actually done the exact opposite. When the act criminalized activities such as squeegeeing and panhandling, the homeless community were forced to find other ways to generate income, which in many cases has led to increasing dependence on other high-risk activities. University of Guelph Professor of Sociology and Anthropology Bill O'Grady studied the social and economic impact of the Safe Streets Act on homeless youth in Toronto.
Well, if you look at it historically, the Safe Street Act is something really unique to Canada, because if you're looking at any sorts of provincial legislation that has tried to really control the activities of homeless people, you're looking back approximately a century. Since then, there have been various municipal attempts to try to curb things such as panhandling and begging and so on. But the Safe Street Act was really something unique in the sense that it was provincial legislation that targeted typically homeless people in the streets of Ontario.
Why do you think it was put in place? What factors do you believe led to it being implemented at that time?
Well, it's a good question. I guess we should begin by briefly talking about the beginnings of squeegee cleaning, at least public or visible squeegee cleaning in Toronto, which emerged in the mid-1990s. And interestingly, at that time, public opinion was either indifferent towards it, or there's some evidence to suggest that many people are actually in favor of it, in the sense that they saw these young people, rightly or wrongly, doing something for the money that they were collecting from the public, as opposed to sort of passive begging. But once the activity got more popular, because it was, in relative terms, lucrative to the street economy at the time, some people were making, I guess the average is around $50 a day. And it was a legal, it was a relatively safe, and it was a regular way to earn money. But since most of the squeegee cleaners were working, at least most of the attention that squeegee cleaners were getting seemed to come from the downtown area, at least in Toronto and also in Ottawa as well. It seems that some people would argue, and I would agree with this, that the business presence, the business concern over it, sort of tarnishing the image of various commercial spots in the downtown area, as well as concerns about the tourist trade, that Toronto was sort of, with publicly displaying homelessness in the form of squeegee cleaning, that it was sort of paying an image of, what's a world-class city doing with homeless people, bothering people at intersections in public. So a few politicians jumped on the bandwagon, both provincial and municipal, garnered some support from a couple newspapers. The Toronto Sun, for example, was sort of depicting squeegee cleaners as criminals and so on. In fact, Mel Laspin also, I think, was supportive of getting rid of squeegee cleaners at the time. So sort of snowballed into really a concern that these people were dangerous, that they were injuring motorists, they were damaging their cars, even though there really was very little empirical evidence out there to suggest that they were doing anything, all that dangerous. In fact, my research showed that it was that most of the dangerous activities linked to this were actually committed by motorists on these street workers. Opening their doors, dragging them inside of the car, a variety of stories of how these workers were being accosted by motorists when they approached them to squeegee clean.
You touched on it briefly, but how did the media portrayal of the homeless community facilitate the campaign to curb activities such as squeegeeing?
Well, I think the media obviously is more than one form. I think the Toronto Sun, at least at the time, I think they played a pretty important role in sort of casting an image that these street people were dangerous and they needed to be controlled, mostly by citing politicians and business people who expressed such views. These were made very clear, very, very evident front page in the press. The other press was a little more sort of resolved around the issue to an extent that they were, you know, there's more debate about it. Whereas I think that some of the AM radio stations, and again the Toronto Sun, I think were at the forefront of sort of leading the charge to, you know, try to control this activity.
Before the implementation of the Act, were Squeaky Kids more involved in criminal activities than other segments of the homeless community?
Yeah, well, actually in 97 or 98, I did some work trying to answer that question. When just after squeegee cleaning became popular, and myself and a couple of other grad students were interviewing people who were currently squeegeeing, and we were asking them, you know, first of all, were they homeless? And in fact, most of them were, or at least had experienced homelessness. And we asked them how they were making money prior to squeegee cleaning. And there were quite a few of them who reported that they had made money through illegal means, mainly through drug dealing and so on. So we also asked a number of street youth who were not squeegee cleaning, and sort of compared the lives of those youth with the lives of the squeegee workers. And it did show, we argue, that the squeegee cleaning youth were actually less criminal than the youth who were not squeegee cleaning. Again, part of the reason why that is that they were able to, you know, earn money in ways that were, you know, less risky. They were legal, so there was sort of a transformation from the illegal economy into squeegee cleaning.
When the Safe Streets Act made it more difficult for squeegeeing to occur, how did those people that were squeegeeing find sources of income to survive?
Well, most of the economic activity shifted from squeegee cleaning to panhandling. Now, panhandling, certain aspects of panhandling are illegal under the Safe Street Act. For example, aggressive panhandling, panhandling next to automatic teller machines, panhandling at bus stops, telephone booths, these kinds of things are illegal. But there really was a shift away from the squeegeeing into the panhandling. And there is also some evidence that there was some movement into drug dealing and a slight movement into social welfare or social welfare recipients.
How did the housing situation of the youth that were squeegeeing change after the implementation of the Safe Streets
Act? Well, we did ask a group of around 55 of these young people 2 years after that squeegeeing was outlawed, and we asked them how their housing had changed over that two-year period. Certainly there was more of them sleeping rough outside. There was also more of them who were using the shelter system, whereas previously, at least the squeegee cleaners that we interviewed, there was several of them who would, not daily, but certainly regularly, would able to collect money so that they could group it together and rent motel rooms for the evening. Very little of that actually was talked about after squeegeeing was outlawed.
How have people been able to continue to squeegee after the implementation of the Act?
Well, it's not so much, it's basically, it's where they squeegee. At least in the city of Toronto, there's very little evidence that they're squeegeeing in the downtown core, that is on major arteries in the actual inner city itself, where that used to be the area where it was really concentrated. Now, the only places where you see it, and interestingly, the police aren't really enforcing the law in these locations, would be on Lakeshore Boulevard and the ramp exits from the Gardiner Expressway. Today, you still see, I drove by there yesterday, and you still see the odd squeegeer, and you also see people who are approaching vehicles with you know, Tim Horton coffee cups looking for money. But the police really, and there was police who were talking about this, and they're saying they don't get many complaints anymore from people who are being approached by these people in that part of the city. But if they were to move into the inner city, into the business district, into the commercial areas, that's when complaints arise and the police have to act. So it typically, right now, it seems to be a complaint-based kind of activity.
How has the relationship between the police and the homeless community changed since the implementation of the Safe Streets Act?
Well, I can't answer that for today, or at least in recent weeks, but certainly when the Act first went into place, and even before the Act went into place, we interviewed several squeegee workers, and we asked them just what their relations were were like with the police, and clearly the police were, you know, taking away their squeegees, sometimes breaking the squeegees. In fact, some people were arguing that they were being charged with carrying an offensive weapon. So really the police were, at least according to some of the reports that we heard, were, you know, trying to, you know, control the activity even before the laws actually passed in January of 2000. So certainly after the law was passed, you know, they could legally charge people for squeegee cleaning with essentially giving out tickets, because it's not a criminal code violation. It's actually a Highway and Traffic Act violation. So, yeah, these young people were just amassing tickets. And word got out in the street that OCAP, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, was actually had legal counsel, and they were representing these young people who were amassing tickets, and they were dealing with them that way. So very few people, if any, were actually paying the fines. But sometimes if they weren't paying the fines and they amassed, you know, a number of tickets, they could be arrested for being in fine default and these sorts of things.
Do you believe that the introduction of the Safe Streets Act has actually made the streets of Toronto safer?
No, I don't think it did at all. I mean, I would argue that, depending on who you talk to, but if you talk to homeless people, I think it's made the streets more dangerous because their income generation has shifted more from generating it in public and looking for public sympathy and this sort of thing into areas of the economy, you know, where they're making money in more dubious ways. And I really don't think the roads were particularly unsafe for motorists while squeegee cleaning was taking place. And I don't think that's, you know, that was not really the reason why the act was put in effect in the first place.
This piece has been produced by Stuart Duncan at CFRU-FM, Campus and Community Radio in Guelph. For more information about CFRU programming, visit our website at www.cfru.ca.